I'm Duncan MacLeod, and this is the Tech Central Show, which is brought to you today by MTN Business. We thank them for sponsoring TCS, and you can visit MTN Business at mtnbusiness.co.za. You can also subscribe to the Tech Central Show on YouTube. The address to use is youtube.com/TechCentral. And while you're at it, why not sign up for our daily newsletter at techcentral.co.za/newsletter, and you'll get all the latest tech news, including these podcasts, delivered to you every morning at 5 a.m., completely free of charge, by the way. Now, Microsoft, Google, and Apple all had their major developer events in recent weeks, and the focus has very much been on artificial intelligence. And to unpack what these big tech companies are doing and have announced, I'm very pleased to welcome Dean Furman onto the show now. Dean is a South African AI thought leader, and he regularly delivers keynotes and training sessions on the subject. And I believe he's even developed an AI board game to help people grasp the concepts of AI. Dean, welcome to the show. Thanks for your time.
Thanks for having me.
Tell me a bit about yourself and your background. How did you get into this field of AI?
So I originally qualified as an actuary, was a bit of a bored actuary, always had a little bit of an eye for innovation, was at Discovery, won their best award for innovation out of any actuary in the group. And I always had my eye on things that were a little bit different. Mm-hmm. I went across to Alexander Forbes and headed up innovation for the business there, and really was grappling with artificial intelligence then on quite a more high level basis. Mm-hmm. But one thing that I realized was starting to talk with more and more businesses, starting to talk with more and more individuals, I was talking a lot about AI and discussing the benefits, mm-hmm. and people didn't know what I was talking about. And then when I started left corporate environment and I started engaging with people around artificial intelligence, the benefits, especially from a strategic point of view, what leaders need to do to start bringing it in, I felt that people were a bit lost. Amazingly, that as time has shifted, you would think that since I started my business in 2017, you would have think that the general education level would have risen. In general, in South Africa, it hasn't to a huge degree. Everyone feels that they've gone to like one or two conferences, so they like know the buzzwords and they know things. But outside of your tech areas or your data science areas, the average leader of a business, which is often my target market, still can't quite say to you exactly what artificial intelligence means for their business, what are the best use cases, how it might impact them, how they might be disrupted, etc. So yeah, I did a whole bunch of stuff in between, wrote a book that was in all the stores, etc., and mm-hmm. developed the AI game, the board game that I only use for training, because one thing is that people become overawed to just stand and talk. This is possible, that's possible, this is possible. It can either excite them but leave them with nothing practical, or scare them, or become too much for them, and people have ADD, and I realized that for me, myself as well, I'm like that. So I created a solution to filter and discover the best applications and use cases for your business, mm-hmm. all through playing a game that you're identifying it yourself. So it's cool. That's called Dawn of Disruption. So it's been,
Dawn of Disruption.
Yeah. It's cool. So over the last few years, we ran hundreds of sessions for probably most of the major corporates out there.
Okay. And what's the sort of reaction you get from ordinary employees of these organizations as you explain these concepts to them?
Yeah, people, funny enough, the first reaction most people have is like, my kids are screwed. It's funny because it's people think often about their kids before they even think about themselves. So the more questions I'll get about, what must my kid do for this future? We're not preparing him. We're spending all this money at the schools, and we're preparing them for a future that's actually not going to be the right future. So that's actually most people's first reaction who actually have kids. And then they start thinking about business. And then people, I feel like the way I put it across, people get excited. That's very accessible. Mm. That I try to say it's not just the hands in the techies and the hands of the people that are the data scientists. It's in the hands of everyone. It's very, very easy to get going with AI. You don't have to be a data scientist to use AI in a major way in your everyday life. So I think I leave it with the people with the empowering message.
Mm-hmm. Good stuff. Well, we're going to come back a little bit later in the discussion to talk about the impact of AI in the corporate environment and what it means for productivity, etc. But I'd like to spend a good chunk of this conversation talking about these developer conferences, which just concluded, because they were all entirely AI focused.
Yes.
is clearly the theme of the technology industry this year. Microsoft, I think, kicked it off with their Build conference in early May. I might have got the Google and Microsoft one mixed up. I think Microsoft was first. Then, of course, Google had its big I.O. developer event. I think that was in just a couple of weeks ago. And then then Apple had its Worldwide Developers Conference, which wasn't entirely AI-focused, but had a huge sections of AI. Dean, it's difficult to know where to start with these developer conferences, so maybe I should just ask you for your sort of broad views on what was announced at these developer events. How significant were some of these announcements, and what do they actually mean for ordinary people?
Okay, great. So I think the first thing to say is to call a spade, they're all generally annoying. Can I tell you why I say that?
Sure.
Is because they don't say, here's the announcements and we launched it and it's in your hands today. So they could almost say whatever they want to say because they don't give you set for most things they do. They don't give set timelines. They're like, no, this is what we're announcing this today and you'll have it at some stage. You know what I mean? There's always a combination between.
It's a bit of vaporware, really.
It's a lot of vaporware. Mm. Some of the things are amazing, and some of the things that it only means something to individuals when they can actually play with it. Mm. Like often some of the technologies, once you actually get your hands on it, you're like, it wasn't as good as it looked in the demo on the box. And especially some of them have been found out with other things around, like for example, OpenAI, when they demonstrated like their video, their Sora capability. And then the person who did a lot of the video editing of that saying like, no, it's not as good as it says on the box. There was a lot of video editing to make it better. So I think to take one step back is to just say these conferences in general are annoying, but then going back into it of what they did announce, I think that I changed my mind a little bit. The first time I watched the Apple one, which we can start there, which was the most recent one.
Yeah, let's start with Apple.
I thought it was like a bit meh. I thought it was a bit disappointing. Not necessarily. There wasn't anything that was just like, wow, that just like blew my mind. But then actually
the calculator app.
No, the calculator was cool. and we'll talk to the calculator thing. And that's what I'm getting to. Mm-hmm. Then when I watched it a second time, I was actually at sunk in. I'm like,
this is pretty cool.
Actually, it's not just what their functionality is. I think that they're the best marketers of the three by far. They're the best at positioning things.
Without a doubt.
They mentioned AI, I think, once. The actual term AI, they mentioned it once. And the only time that they mentioned it was to introduce what they call Apple Intelligence Now. They didn't talk about it. And it's been really what they've always spoken about. Mm. It's not about the tech. It's about what it means for the user.
Mm.
So I think by far their positioning of what it is, theirs was the best. And in a way, you didn't have to be a developer to actually understand their conference. Like a 10-year-old who plays with their parents' Apple device could have understood that. It was very non-jargon, non-techie, non-developer type conference. It was and when I watch it again, I'm like, okay, they've got the thought process, at least before we get to the features, the best. Because I think Microsoft, they've done amazing work, and I still think that they're the leaders in all of this, and they're the force to be reckoned with, I reckon, in this area, especially with their partnership with OpenAI. But in terms of positioning, I think Apple got it right the most. It's not about – it's almost like they had their magic dust that they're going to have across the Apple devices. Mm. That it's not about, oh, there's this AI like Microsoft. It's like you've got 50,000 co-pilots. Now also when I do the training with people, you have to discuss and be like – they're like, no, we need co-pilot training. I'm like, cool. Okay, let's just make sure we're talking about the same thing because there's 50,000 co-pilots. And, you know, and even that, the number of different solutions that especially Microsoft spoke about, it's just chamos, what's a better word?
Yes,
you know what I mean? It's all over the place. It's to try put that together, even for any other developers there who are really embedded in the ecosystem, to put all those pieces together. Mm. You know, you could do your doctorate on that, the Microsoft Build afterwards. That's how many components there were. Whereas Apple, it sort of just was like, no, not even talk about AI. We got this thing now that they call Apple Intelligence. It makes it seem like there's a whole new different thing.
Like they invented it,
Like they invented it. And it's almost like this little fairy dust that they sprinkled across everything. Every one of these interactions is just a bit better now because there's this Apple Intelligence in it. And the truth is, like, everyone's like, oh, what's Apple's response now to this AI move? they've had, and all of them have got had so much AI in their devices and everything for years and years and years. I think the big shift was now the generative AI thing. And again, it's funny that you have the powerful generative AI and things that people are working on with OpenAI and Microsoft together. And I promise you, my prediction is that this, what do they call it? The emoji, the Genmoji.
Genmoji. Oh, yeah, yeah, a terrible yeah. term.
Genmoji. That will get more traction than anything else, because that's at the end of the day what people will see, yeah. and it'll become viral. Someone will send the customized emoji to someone else, and they'll be like, that's yeah. amazing. First time they see it, they'll be sending to each other, and they'll be like, Apple's just.
Let's not forget, of course, that Mark Zuckerberg has been doing all this at Facebook or Meta for months now.
But that doesn't matter. They just got that way of putting it across there. So when I watched it the second time, I was like, okay, now they did something.
It was a lot of announcements that all kind of on their own weren't that significant, but when you put them all together, it was actually quite a significant event.
Yes.
And certainly investors have reacted to it. And one point you made about this not being necessarily pitched directly at developers, one opinion, I forget where I read it, it could have been Wall Street Journal or somewhere, made the point that this was actually a pitch at Wall Street. This was Apple saying, putting a stake in the ground and saying, we get AI, we're doing AI, Wall Street investors take notice. And they did. The share price rallied, and they're now the most valuable company in the world once again.
Yes, and it was very interesting the way they did it, because they left the AI for loss and didn't even call it AI. So they started talking about the headsets, the TVs, everything like that. And then only towards the end, they're like, oh, by the way, he has this one Apple intelligence, and then they unloaded all this amazing things. And I think that they really did, like, every touch point. You mentioned the calculator. There's so much tech in that calculator.
Yeah, it's fantastic.
It's just ridiculous. Just the image recognition to actually understand what someone's written, and then to give the answer in a similar type of writing to what they were doing, plus doing the mass and the computation is just incredible. And it's funny, because I've always been criticized, like, there's no proper better Apple calculator.
There's an Apple calculator on the iPad. Yeah, coming.
Exactly. So that's cool. Like all this stuff combined, as you said, it's just awesome. And the thing is that I saw a study the other day that they did, like neuroscientists did, that it was very interesting. They did brain scans on people that were Apple users and Samsung users. Mm-hmm. And the Apple users, they actually tested what's the emotional response when someone talks about Apple. And they showed it was like a strong emotional response, the same as if you talk about a loved one. That's their approach to their devices, whereas the Samsung users didn't have that same response.
Fascinating.
Yeah, and their only response was that if you talked about Apple, they had like a negative response towards Apple in terms of that emotional response coming up.
Interesting.
That it's almost like Apple is the pinnacle, you know what I mean? People love it. They bought into it. You've got the Apple groupies. They're going to love all these little features coming together.
I was just going to say the Apple fanboys. I mean, we all know them.
They're going to be so annoying now when they're going to send you these emojis of going on. But I think they really did get it right. One thing that was interesting, and again, I was in my mind, is it amazing that they had almost maybe the humility to partner with OpenAI and the ChatGPT functionality? Mm. Or was it like almost like a big statement of that they lost out here to the fact that we just can't compete? The fact that now with Siri and other interactions, that when Siri on the device can't answer a question well enough, you have the option to say, no, go check ChatGPT, which is like, go see the thing that's better than what we have now. So I think from the good perspective is that they were like, everything about Apple has to be the best. And in this area, we couldn't produce the best. So we brought in the best to make sure that if you're using Apple, you've got the best. Mm.
But they're probably working on their own large language models, and the plan eventually is probably to replace
OpenAI. Definitely. So the way I see it is that Siri's going to end with the on-device, almost like edge technology, that their own large language models will answer most of the things. Mm-hmm. And only when it's like, no, we don't actually have that. We need more powerful models. So we need to go to the cloud and we need to get it from OpenAI. They'll go there. And over time, as they refine that, it will probably be calling less and less and less of OpenAI until they don't need them anymore.
Yeah.
But it is a big admission for Apple to be like, no, we're not using our own models. We're using an external model for this stuff. I thought was quite a big thing.
So do you think this is going to drive a fresh round of iPhone sales and iPad sales and Mac sales on the back of this?
I think so. I think because the reality also is that all the stuff there was, unless get a surprise, there's no cost to. It's just like, no, you've got this and this is there. Whereas very different to, for example, Microsoft, where everything's okay. Now it's extra $30 a month or $20 a month, depending what you do. Because they've got the hardware play, it becomes it's a very different business model of what they're able to do compared to that. I think that there will be a shift. And I think it's the slight shift. And I think it's like those small things that we mentioned, just those Genmojis and those things, because it's funny, that's not the core functionality, the hardcore stuff, but that's what will draw people in to be like.
And then they'll start experimenting with other aspects of AI because they see how powerful Genmojis are, for example. How can I use this at work?
Exactly. And the truth is we're entering an age to where you can't ignore AI, because the thing is that it's got to be on all those devices. And now on Microsoft's side, that they announced their Copilot for PC.
Mm-hmm.
But even before that, now for the first time in 30 years, when they've partnered with a lot of the other manufacturers, that they're going to have a Copilot button as a button on your PC. Like, you can't escape this now. It's like we enter the age of AI, and whether you have to enter it, whether you're kicking, screaming, however you want to enter it, you're entering this age of AI, or you're going to be left behind big time.
And of course, the PC industry is also hoping for a big upgrade cycle. Do you think this is going to be transformative for the IT industry, or do you think that these big tech companies are perhaps getting a little bit ahead of themselves?
I think that is very much the first version. That's the thing. And which is exciting also, because the first version of everything sucks when you look back at it, and you look back like, that really sucked. I think
like the original iPhone.
exactly.
It was transformative, but it was also crap.
Yeah, exactly. So right now we're at the worst that AI is ever going to be, and it's pretty damn good. So like, even just 1 year from now, it's going to be amazing. If you look back at the original ChatGPT 3.5 that came out, that blew everyone's mind, like, this is the best thing ever.
Yeah.
Look at now, you're like, jeez, that's rubbish.
It's true.
So
GPT-4o is pretty amazing. You must have spent hours conversing with that new persistent chatbot, and it's pretty astonishing the way they've infused almost human-like conversation into this generative AI now. It's actually made me quite excited about what's coming in the next decade in terms of the advances we're seeing in robotics. And when those get fused with the advances we're seeing in AI, are we heading towards the era of intelligent robots in the next decade?
I still think that the hardware and robotics is – the costs are still prohibitive. That's the biggest problem. So definitely in the next decade you'll have those proper intelligent robots, but the accessibility to the average company or individuals is just not there. Like, if you look at the – Boston Dynamics, as an example, just what one of their robots cost.
Sure.
You know what I mean? It's completely different to software. Software with having something on your device, a ChatGPT-like system, et cetera, that's child's play compared to actually working out how to make robotics work in an intelligent way at scale for the average company, you know?
Or consumer.
Yeah. And or consumer, yes.
There have been rumors that Apple is working on a home robot, that this could be their next big product category. What are your thoughts on that?
So I would be surprised if it happens soon. But I've been surprised by quite a lot of things in the last year. All I can say is their first version will suck. Like, that's the thing. I'm definitely not buying their first version.
Never buy a Gen 1 Apple product.
No, exactly. But although, like, when the latest GPT 4 came out, as soon as you hear that voice coming, you're like, oh, wait. Just this whole perverse society where people are going to have, like, just like the movie Her, it's going to be like people are going to use their phone as their girlfriend. They're going to, you know, it's going to be this whole, like, strange, technology has made that social interaction element
I must tell you something. I'm already having conversations with AIs in my car with ChatGPT-4 I find time spent in the car very wasted. I do listen to a lot of podcasts and that sort of thing in the vehicle, in my car. But lately I've just, I'm interested in a subject. I'll just open it at ChatGPT and I'll start conversing with it. Tell me about something. And I drive and I find I've used that half an hour I spent in the car very productively because I've learned about something new and I can have a conversation with it. And, tell me more about that. And
but how strange is this? So say someone does that. They had this great conversation with the AI. They come home with their wife. They conversationed out because they've been talking to the AI. You know, it's like quite a weird world we're moving into. You know, the wife getting jealous. You always speak to your AI, but you never speak to me. You know.
Yeah.
It's like we're really there. It's like weird. It's creepy and weird and everything that. And again, there's going to be like no need for certain professions, like a psychologist. You can just say, you're an expert in Freud, or you're an expert in cognitive behavioral therapy, or you tell it whatever it needs to do. Here's my issues. This is what's happening. Let's talk this through, find out, and coach me on how to do that. Why do you even need to pay to go to a psychologist, you know? It's like a lot of different types of professions, or any business advisor, you'd be able to do that. Like you have a business advisor coming in, you can get better advice from your phone, sounds real, instant, can draw on more knowledge than any human can have. There's no reason for that. It's a very interesting time we've got getting moving into.
Although maybe it's not quite there yet, because there was the incident, I think it was Google. I could be wrong. Where someone said it was Google. The new AI results that had baked into US
eating rocks
of Google.
And
there was once a person who posted, "I am depressed," and then it pulled something from Reddit apparently and said, "Well, people in this position have sometimes considered jumping off the Golden Gate Bridge."
That's true. But you know what? The thing is that everyone when they look at the AI, has the assumption in their head that human responses are 100% perfect. Mm. Trust me, there's plenty of psychologists that have absolutely ruined people. There's plenty friends that have absolutely ruined people. But your friends are talking nonsense to you half the time. And when you're asking advisors, they're making things up. Consultants are making things up for years as they go along. And they're definitely – and that's, I think, why there's still a place for me, to be honest, because you have to teach people how to use it properly, but you have to teach them how to use it responsibly.
Yes.
Because there is a lot of areas where it could go wrong, and there is a lot of areas where you could bring danger into your company. Like, you can have the best cybersecurity systems in the world, but if someone doesn't know how to use certain of these AI programs, that all goes to nothing, because you have to understand the risks of all these things. So it's something that's amazing. It can have huge benefits for everyone. But at the same time, you have to know how to use it safely.
Good. Well, the AI has a use for you for now. We'll call you the AI whisperer. How's that?
Exactly.
So we haven't spoken about Google yet, and we know Google's had some troubles.
Yes.
Obviously rushing to get to market and had fallen behind OpenAI prior to even the Google I.O. recent I.O. conference. There were all sorts of problems with its generative AI system, the Black Nazis example, amongst many others. What is your view on Google? Do you think that this is an existential threat to them, and do you think they've done enough to catch up?
So it's not that the AI isn't good. That's the less of a problem, is that they're stuck between a rock and a hard place. Their whole business, their search business, is designed in a way that they make money when people click on sites. So now even their model now that they've put is the AR summaries, the quick AR generated responses, it shoots them in the foot. Mm-hmm. If people look at that and they don't go into all those links, their whole business, model.
Sponsored links, which stops. You won't even necessarily see anymore if you're having a conversation with
the AI. So what they are going to, what they say now is that they will bring that into those generative summaries, and you'll have, they'll put it smart, the links in the right places, because they have to.
Yeah.
Otherwise, their business model fails. And that's why the Perplexity CEO put it very, very well. He's like, for us, the amount of money that we can make as a startup doing this as a search tool, the research tool that provides links to everything we need is amazing. You know, like the amount of money we can make is brilliant for a startup. If we become worth a few billion dollars, that's great. Google now are in the position that they can't switch everyone over to this better model that works better. Mm-hmm. There's absolutely no doubt that it's better to be able to ask one question, get a summarized answer that's right with some links that you could research further than the traditional way of Google, which is just a glorified librarian. If you think about it, you ask a question and they're like, here's 100 million sources that might answer your question. Mm-hmm. And we've put it in terms of relevance and credibility. And by the way, we've also put a lot of paid for other references that people have incentivized us to put in front of you that you have to get past before you get to a proper result. There's no doubt that in the consumer's position, the AI model's better. But Google, as I said, they're stuck between a rock and a hard place. If they move towards the better model that is better for everyone, their revenues just plummet big time. So I think it's less of a worry that they suggest putting glue in your cheese, which is obviously real bad. The bigger worry is that strategically, what are they going to do with this whole thing? Because their whole business model, everything that Google's been built on top of, comes crumbling down of how they make their revenues, comes crumbling down. And that's compare that to an Apple, where Apple were like, no, this is just going to make the user experience better. And who cares about what AI we're using it? These are all cool things you can do. Google are like, no, for us to make money, we're going to have to make things a lot worse for you. So I think that's the biggest problem.
So
for
what does this mean for the future of internet search? And does this give a leg up to the perennial second place Bing?
Yeah. So I always used to joke that you're better off asking Chandler Bing than Microsoft Bing for results. and then he passed away, and then it seemed wrong saying the joke. But like, but now it does. Finally, something like, let's be honest, we never thought it would happen. They were such a leader, and Bing sucked. It was embarrassing. You'd be like, well, where's the nearest hospital, and they'll give you a recipe for spaghetti bolognese. They like had no clue. Like, honestly, if they had to just randomly give you something, it would have been better than whatever they were doing, and Yahoo and everything. Mm. And that's why in recent years, the most searched word on Bing's always been Google. Mm-hmm. Like, people just use Bing to search Google, that, you know, to find Google. And people don't use Bing when they can't work out how to make Google the default.
It's a bit like how people used to use Internet Explorer to search for Chrome.
Exactly. It is like that. But now this AI has really become a lever. It's been very interesting. And in a way, it is nice. It is nice to see. And the thing is that if you look back in the day, which is back in the day, but like when, if you look at all the emails that OpenAI shared when Musk was suing them and shared the emails, that his big worry was always like, Google, all the intelligence in this area is all in the hands of Google, 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 Google. Now it's amazing how things have shifted now that I think the reason it's shifted is not because they've got smaller people at OpenAI or Microsoft or Apple than they've got at Google. And it's not that the data scientists can't get the stuff right. They will get the stuff right. But the fact that it's just so in the face of their business model, as I said. And the other thing is that OpenAI really had the advantage over everyone because they could afford to make mistakes. They were like, wow, this is a system that hallucinates some of the time. It gets things wrong. It might say something stupid to you, but most of the time it's amazing. And it was going from scratch. Their brand value could just go up and up and up. And Google, on the other hand, built on the solidity of the results, the credibility, everything. Mm. They make one mistake and already things drop. Even originally, going back now to these time frames, probably a year ago even, when they had initial video that they put out around the Galaxy, the demoing Gemini, what was bought at the time, and they got something wrong about the Galaxy, saying it was the first star planet.
I remember the
thing that was discovered. And they lost about $100 billion
in one day.
from that. Yeah, imagine the person who didn't check that little marketing video. But they can't afford to make mistakes, which is really why OpenAI could develop, and make mistakes along the way. No one even cares they made the mistakes because they know they are a work in progress.
And also protecting the business model. Do you think that Google has became too conservative in developing this stuff and experimenting and making it available to end users. And that's allowed OpenAI and then Microsoft to step into the breach and say, hey, guys, check out all this cool stuff we can do. Google had a lot of this stuff, just weren't prepared to release it because it was potentially a threat to their business model.
Yeah, and in the way that Microsoft are in a nice position, because they can let OpenAI make any of the mistakes, and then like once it's perfect down patched, it's a Microsoft thing, so it does no brand damage to Microsoft. And that's you probably find a better strategy would have been that to create a completely separate entity that it happened to be that Google owned, and to put out all this AI as a completely separate competing brand. And almost
something
like
inside the Alphabet stable.
In the Alphabet stable, instead of worrying about all these other things that they got a real bad hit rate in terms of innovations. If you look at that whole innovation lab that they have, there's not many massive Google innovations and successes that have come out of that. So having this as a separate thing, because then it's not Google that messed up. It's something in the Alphabet stable that goes out, and when it's mature enough, it will become part of that ecosystem. And I think that's why it's not so bad being conservative, as has Apple shown. Apple's been very quiet, very conservative, very quiet. But they knew they had to get this completely right, because they had too much to lose, just like Google. So they bought bought their time, and now, as you said, had a massive increase. I feel that Google contradicted themselves towards the beginning, because they came out and they said that no, we don't want to have a knee jerk reaction to this. We want to only release it when it's right and it's solid, and we don't want to be irresponsible by doing this. But then they were getting on too much pressure, and then they released that video about the Galaxy, and suddenly in their market cap, they lost a huge amount. So they did react too much. They should have really been more careful and methodical around what they were doing. Listen, so easy to say, what they should have done. But again, I think that whatever they would have done would have been a loss for them.
Yeah. Microsoft has had some issues as well. It hasn't been as if they've executed perfectly. Of course, the most recent example is Windows Recall, which was announced with great fanfare just a few weeks ago. And they've now said they're pulling back on this, and it won't be generally available to consumers for some time until they've ironed out issues and resolved the security concerns. Do you think that maybe these companies are rushing things a little bit too much?
Yes and no. So I think it's also the way that you position it. So I think that's also versus, and I still believe, don't get me wrong, I still think that Microsoft will be the big winner here, unless they screw something up. I think they're the best place by far to win this whole.
They've been known to screw things up in the past. So no, don't put it past them, but.
No, 100%. I'm not a fanboy of any of them. I'm watch from afar and see and whatever's most useful, you put in, but they best place out of everything, but you see the way that Apple positioned it was also clever. Security was a major, major, major emphasis on everything that they do. They're talking about their secure cloud and everything like that. And I feel that the way that certain features that people talked about within Siri on the phone, knowing exactly what you could do and asking and getting your information, etc., wasn't dealt with the same backlash as Recall was. And it pretty much does the exact same thing. Which is interesting. So I think the way they positioned it, they felt like, no, we've got your safety at heart. And it was different to that Microsoft. For some reason, the backlash of a recall was a lot more than for Apple. So
I think that's because there's been so much criticism in recent months of Microsoft with Russian hackers and all sorts of other people breaking into their systems. That, in fact, Satya Nadella, the CEO of Microsoft, recommitted the company a couple of weeks ago to security and everything. That's their number one priority now. So that it kind of, this Windows Recall thing, I guess, came around in the environment where Microsoft's already under a lot of scrutiny over its security practices.
Yeah, for sure. And the recall, the recall with that, you can go slow with that stuff. And now that it looks like they're going to make it opt in for that.
Yes.
But again, there's like, enterprise clients just aren't going to go for that in any shape or form. Even now with ChatGPT, they don't know what to do with themselves, most of them. That recall in the enterprise space, isn't going to fly in the individual space unless it's got real security built in around it.
Yeah.
In the individual space, I think people find it awesome because also the average individual working doesn't often even realize the security risks of doing anything.
Yeah, for sure, for sure. All right. The only other company that we haven't spoken about, and they didn't have a developer conference, although their CEO has been on stage many times in the last few weeks, but that's NVIDIA. They're the big winner out of this Gen A, right? I mean, their market cap has risen by something like $2 trillion in the last 18 months or so. Is this a bubble that we're seeing in NVIDIA? Do you think this is just because of all the investments that's going on to the hyperscale data centers by the likes of Microsoft and Google and others? Does NVIDIA come crashing back down to earth at some point soon?
It might a little bit, but like at least they're adding proper value.
Yeah.
Like, it's not one of those things like, you know, you got
plumbing.
But like a Bitcoin that goes up and there's no essence and value behind it, or even a Tesla. The numbers just never justified what was going on there. NVIDIA,
actually, the numbers,
they do, and the numbers are impressive. Their returns are impressive. They are actually the future of computing, and there isn't really anyone who's coming close to what they're able to do. That the CEO of NVIDIA said that even if his competitors make their product free, we're still cheaper than them because of the price of running the things, which is quite a big statement. It's like, how do you compete with that? Because the quality of what they do is also so good. So the cheapest and the best, and with the best brand value now, it's a package that, again, unless they really screw something up, they're not going anywhere anytime soon.
Yeah, AMD is there as well, but they do seem to be very much the follower. Intel, we were talking before we started recording, Intel seems to be nowhere.
It's hard to know what happens internally. Probably the internal culture might not be amazing at that company. But again, like NVIDIA, their big competitor has been for many years, been Intel, but their stock grew more in a day than the whole market cap of Intel, which
it's astonishing. I mean, Intel's sitting on a market cap of, what, $150 or $200 billion. And NVIDIA sitting on $3 trillion. There's a chip company with $3 trillion market cap. It's absolutely astonishing. But if you actually crunch the numbers, and analysts have done it, you look at the earnings and the expected earnings and then calculate the price earnings multiple, it's actually justified.
Yeah, and it's funny because every few months it's like, oh, well, they've added another trillion. It was like, seemed like just yesterday you're like, wow, they're a $1 trillion company. And then like a couple months later it was like, now they're $2 trillion. And I was like, oh, they're $3 trillion. It's like, you're like, the growth is just incredible. And a lot of the things also, like, it's amazing that they were quite quiet up until recent times in terms of like news quiet, not in terms of those really in the know and stuff like that. And even a lot of people were talking about more their NVIDIA multiverse and everything that they were doing in that space. And maybe that was more grabbing certain headlines. And they've rightly so now actually just shown what happens when a company really can create something awesome and really add value. I think that the stat was that the market value per employee that works for them is something like $100 million or something like that, which is unheard of. You know, each person is almost like created in, say, like rand terms, over $1 billion rand in value for the company, which is, where do you have a company like that?
And what's amazing is, apart from gamers, 3 years ago, no one knew about NVIDIA. NVIDIA, what's that? Who's that? You know, obviously, if you're a gamer, you knew who NVIDIA was because you used their graphics cards. But beyond that, your average consumer out there probably hadn't even heard of the word NVIDIA before.
No, completely. But I think they just boiled down and an example to companies of that when you can innovate and push boundaries, like the world's your oyster. They really got down to it, and they created value not through marketing, not through hype, not through everything, but their product is the best of the best. Their product is just amazing.
Engineering firm. They focus on engineering relentlessly.
Exactly. It's a little bit like what Elon Musk is with from his Tesla side.
And SpaceX, like, as well.
He always says he's more of an engineer than he is of a businessman. Like, that's what he works at most of his day to day. I can imagine that the CEO of NVIDIA would probably be a little bit the same of understanding that type of information.
Yeah. And that's where Intel went wrong. They appointed marketing guys, business guys, to run the company instead of engineers, and then that's where they tripped up.
Yeah, no, so that's a lesson. Get an engineer to run your company.
Certainly at this sort of level of high-tech innovation. Let's bring it home for the final segment of this discussion. And let's look at South African consumers, South African business. I guess the consumer conversation is not just a South African conversation, it's a global conversation. But from a consumer perspective, what do you think people should be excited about? I mean, we've seen things like live AR translation on latest Samsung phones. We've seen the developments that are coming to the iPhone and to the Mac, where it will help you rewrite your emails and all that sort of thing. And is this fundamentally going to change the way ordinary consumers interface with technology?
I think so, but I think there's a mind shift that has to happen. I've seen it firsthand. I've been very surprised at how much I've had to handhold people to shift them towards using this stuff. So I run lots of like ChatGPT masterclasses and generative AI masterclasses and stuff. And the amount of times where you think, okay, no, from the keynote of doing for an hour and show them what's possible and that people would run with it. Mm-hmm. Not everyone does. A lot of people need that. You need to have a session where they come and they bring their laptops and you have to show them. Like,
are they scared of experimenting with it?
A little bit scared, but also I've been surprised. People don't connect the dots as much as like maybe yourself and I would, or certain individuals. I think that it is something new for them, which took me a little while to connect with that. A lot of it is so easy. On the face of it, you're like, the barrier of using this is so small. If you could talk to a human, you could talk to this. But a lot of people don't realize, like, they still only use ChatGPT to be able to write emails to people and nothing more, maybe a blog. Besides that, to show them of how they can help them with project plans, business cases, almost anything related to what you're doing. People are like, wow, I couldn't believe I could ever do that once you show them. But you're like, oh, well, I thought it would have been obvious. But now I realize that actually most people, it's not obvious. A lot of people need a lot of that handholding to start using it in their day-to-day basics. This has actually been the biggest learning for me of how much people need support to be able to, in the work environment, to be able to start engaging with it. I think you've done something in a certain way for such a long time that people, one, have to get over feeling guilty, like, that this is doing all my work for me.
Has to be illegal.
Yeah, exactly. And being scared of it and really knowing that there's a shift happening. And that's why leaders also need to be very supportive of it, to show it's irresponsible not to use this stuff. And because it doesn't make sense to not be able to use this stuff and to get something done in a day that should take you 5 minutes to do with this type of technology. Mm. There's no excuse. Obviously, you have to use it safely. And to give that psychological safety for people to think that, okay, well, this is actually doing most of my job now for me. Like, what value do I give? Companies have to really give that psychological safety and then guide people into, no, this is where you add value now to us. And obviously, if they can't find a place that people can add value now, that's a hot discussion. And I don't even want to go there with job losses, because that's also a reality that people try to avoid, and obviously when I go to corporate clients, I have this positive angle on it, because it's not, you know, my place to scare anyone, unless one or two companies tell me to scare people. But besides that, is that to really realize that, give your people a realization that this thing is going to do a lot of the work you were doing, but now it's freeing you up to add the value that you really could bring. So the one CEO recently said to his people, like his exco team, when I ran a session, he's like, guys, you could finally use your brains. It's like, for the first time ever, you're going to be using your brains, because he had a funny way of putting it. But what the message he was trying to get across was that you're highly paid individuals, super smart. We pay you for your decision-making, for your insight, for your strategic vision. Most of the time, you just put out fires and do admin. And now he's like, no, this thing can really free up your time, that we can actually think of how to better the company and innovate and do new things. Again, that's why you have to have people realize that this will do that so-called donkey work. And now you really, the individuality that each person can bring, whatever that be, it may be, can do that. And also there has to be a lot of in larger companies, there needs to be reskilling opportunities of people because the reality is that there's no reason to get people to do things if they take 10 times longer than the technology to do it and the technology is much cheaper. You've got to find a place for people to be able to do,
Is that CEO right? Is this going to lead to a step change in productivity in business?
It can. So I always say with things, you can lead a horse to water, but you can't make them drink. So I've seen the companies that are really I've worked with, and then they're like on board and they've engaged already. Can't compare what their company is now to before, because they've really engaged with it differently and they've gone all in with this. And the productivity gains have been absolutely massive. And actually, they have times. And also, the work-life balance is completely different. To be able to not work those late nights and that. And when people are fresher, they're happier having that. They're a whole different frame of mind to be able to guide a company going forward. So I've seen firsthand how some companies have really, really made step changes with it. And there are others that the culture's a little bit more toxic and there's a lot more cultures of fear, et cetera, with it, that is a lot harder because people then are scared to embrace it and that becomes harder.
So do you think the companies that are going to benefit most from the productivity gains that this technology presents have a specific corporate culture?
Yeah. So a corporate culture that they actually care about their people, especially. So, like, I've had two sessions. I never thought that anyone would cry in my AR sessions. Like, you think, like, if you had to tell me, why would anyone? I'm like, I don't know. Unless they stub their toe, I don't know what's going to go on. Now, twice recently, people started crying. And they said that pretty much the same thing. They're like, for the last three months, we've had 2 hours sleep every night. Because we've had this workload that we just can't get through and we've got these massive projects and the pressure and everything. And if we were able to use these tools, we didn't know they existed. If we were able to do it in this way, like it would have been completely different. We could have done it in no time to be able to do that. And it just shows that I think that's why people have the responsibility to get this in their hands. It's an enabler for people. And the companies that really, if you care about your people, you will help them use AR to be better. Because, again, the work, corporate work over the last 20 years for most companies has really sucked. Like we've really, the work that's robotic and the work that doesn't bring out the individual or the passion in an individual, that's what people have been doing most of the time. And this really opens up a better time and a newer time for people to really not be caught down in the monotonous work. But again, it has to be in an environment where people feel that psychological safety, which I think is the big word here, that they can embrace the stuff. And if it's doing my work, I know because my company's still got to look after me. And got a culture of learning, a learning culture where not just the tick the box learning culture, oh, we've done how much learning we have to do, look, we've done our training, but one where they encourage people to grow and to learn with it, because those companies, people will be operating on a whole new level. And sorry, I'm just yapping, but the reality is that it's like having staff on demand. It really is. It's like you just tell ChatGPT or Gemini or Claude or whichever different program it may be, you act as this professional, do this piece of work for me. You act as a different professional, do this. It's like having assistance on demand. It's like clicking your finger and now you've got this assistant that will just help you with anything you got to do. It's amazing. Once in a time it does get something wrong, so great. There's still a place for you. You need to get your expertise and guard what your assistant's doing, and you work together with the assistant. It happened to be the assistant's virtual, but it's an amazing time. And the fact that people don't jump more in at this as like a silver bullet is ridiculous, because it's like you're irresponsible if you ignore it.
I guess people are resistant to change. People are scared of change.
Scared. And another thing I realize is that people have been preached about AR for so long. Like, when did we hear about the fourth industrial revolution? It's like decades. You have all these consultancies who, I don't know, No, nothing. That's coming in and they coming in talking about, oh, well, AI, look at our AI reports. We've got a 50-page AI report of how it's going to shape. Now's the time of AI, the age of AI. They've been hearing AI, AI, AI. It's, and I always say it's like, boy cried wolf.
Mm.
Now the wolf has come and everyone's like, yeah, you've told us about AI for years, whatever, you know? It's like people don't actually get it and believe it. Like, but the truth is that the wolves are out. Like now you can't do that. I know with my own work and my own life, it's like, sure, there's almost nothing that I do without having AI help me in one shape or form. And it's better for that. And I got extra time and it's going to be the case for everyone.
What advice do you give to companies looking at this and how they – I imagine you talk to a lot of companies who haven't even started to dabble in this stuff.
Yeah.
Maybe one or two individuals have been playing around with it in their spare time, but there's no sort of corporate policy around it. What do you advise companies? Some of the companies I've spoken to have made Microsoft Copilot available to their executive team, but not to the rest of the organization.
Yeah.
A lot of South African companies seem to be taking the approach, okay, we're going to do AI, we're going to go to Microsoft.
Yes.
Is that good enough?
I think so. I think, but you can't just give them the tool. You have to train them properly.
Mm-hmm.
That's been my big learning. If you asked me a few months ago and you said, okay, make it accessible to people with limited, you know, knowledge and awareness, people would have been fine and they would fly with all this new technology that figured out.
Mm-hmm.
I realize now how important that the training, both in terms of the functional ability to use these things, as well as getting them over that mind shift. And you have to really have campaigns around your company, internal marketing, to really be like a new way of working, a new dawn that you've got for that. And even in that line, if I was a company, I would be like, because we care about you so much as individuals, we want to get these tools in your hands so that to free you up to do work you love that could add value to us, or, you know, have that work-life balance and set it more than like, oh, here's some tech tools, like more the Apple vibe than anything else with it. A lot of the companies that I feel that the Microsoft Copilot's a good route to go with because it's got a lot of the security built into it. Now it's sort of leveled up that even the latest OpenAI technologies are in that Copilot. So, for example, for one of the banks now, I'm doing a lot of the training for them and they've gone Copilot big time, and it's got good guardrails in it, and there's one or two little things that it can't do, but Copilot's really, really good, and it's got a lot of the safety mechanisms that you would have, and I think that's a good route to go with. I think so. You can't just have Copilot by itself, and I'll say that it's the same with any technology. It's not just AI. Like a lot of companies, they've got the best learning resources that they're paying absolute millions for. They've got LinkedIn Learning, Udemy license, every top thing out there. And they all say to me, because also I deal a lot with by the nature of my business, a lot of like heads of learning and HR directors, they're like, we pay huge amounts for free. They can go and learn amazing things, but the adoption rate, doesn't matter what system they bring in, is so little.
Mm.
People need to a bit of that, funny enough, in-person hand-holding and stuff, or that mind shift. So you have to do good internal marketing to get people to shift that perspective and that. And like, it's a lot harder for like companies that got 40,000 people.
Mm.
A lot of the like that I've worked with as well, because most of my clients are those major companies, but I've worked with a lot of companies that are the 200, 300 person companies. Oh, if you got like that number of employees, you can turn that culture into like AI driven in no time because it's manageable and you can get people on board and you can shift things in such a major fashion, you know, without a lot of that other extra bureaucracy and that, you know, natural toxicity that comes with companies that are a little bit bigger. But like if you're a company that's got a few hundred people, oh my word, you can change overnight. And to be honest, if you're even smaller, even better. If you've got a 20-person company, like your whole company needs to just embrace it a massive time. And you have to set up also enough peer-to-peer learning so that what I often find is that you'll have two people sitting around next to each other doing almost the same job. one's using this and flying with it, but it doesn't actually mention it to the person next to them.
So you kind of you want to make them the champion in that department for the technology.
Set up the champion for the technology. And also there it becomes all that human element as well. Some people feel like, well, this is my competitive edge. I'm not telling anyone over this. It's like different. Again, it's very different compared to the culture of the company. Mm. Usually I can suss that out within like 5 minutes of getting into the rooms. You can check like, oh, this place will fly with it, or this place is going to be difficult.
Do you think it should be led by someone in the C-suite? And if so, who? Which role?
To be honest, all of them. Because the problem is that you can't – I know it's maybe a lot of your audience is the CTOs or CIOs, et cetera. Mm-hmm. The problem is as soon as you become – it's their responsibility at – puts that blockage between everyone else. So some people tell me, no, our CTO, our CIO is working on this. You know, no, it's different. Your AI you're building into your systems and that type of, you know, that type of AI. The generative AI now is not the responsibility of the CTO. It's not the CIO. It's almost like the responsibility of the head of HR more than it is of the CTO.
I was about to say, should the HR function be leading with this?
It is. And the truth is, should be, they should all be completely accountable, the whole C-suite. Mm-hmm. It should just be anything that you do, okay, how's it enabled by AI? You've got your strategy. So the biggest problem is this, that imagine most leadership teams now, come, we're going to have a strategy meeting. We're going to suss out the things. What are we going to do for the next year? What are we going to do? Most leadership teams know next to nothing about this, right? And even sometimes including the CTO and CIO, funnily enough, some of them have got very deep knowledge, but very lack of breadth of knowledge. You've got amazing exceptions. Like you've got amazing exceptions because incredible people. But like generally I've been surprised also, but like a lot of people got very deep knowledge. But the problem with being in especially a big corporate, you've got a proper big day job. Mm-hmm. Because I know for me is that it's my full-time responsibility to keep up to date with this because so many companies are relying on me and I do the training and keynotes and so many people with advice and all of this stuff. I don't have a proper job besides this. You know what I mean? This is my job is to keep up to date with this stuff and it's hard because everything's shifting. These people now have got a proper full-time job. To keep your finger on the pulse with this stuff is super hard, even if you are the CTO or the CIO.
You're literally going to be reading all day.
Exactly. And then you still got your actual job to do. So the whole thing is, and another thing, sorry, I know I'm talking too much. This is going to be like your longest podcast of all time. But the thing is that the one thing that's been interesting also is that companies have come into me and said, no, do you know what? We're really on top of the stuff. Usually have the lowest level of knowledge possible. It's funny. I've learned my lesson because at the beginning, I used to think when they tell you, no, we're very clued up with this, you pitch it at a higher level and stuff. And I've seen that usually the ones that think they know the most know the least, and the ones that come to you be like, you know what, we know we're with us. We got no clue. Got to come in and help us. They generally got a better level of knowledge than the other ones because like you don't know what you don't know until you get exposed to it. Mm-hmm. And it's very dangerous that companies are leading these big organizations and having no clue. One, they're being charged by vendors millions for solutions that you could get for free or for next to nothing because they just don't know that. Second is they got no idea the disruption this could cause their own industry. Mm-hmm. Three, they got no idea the innovations they could make by adapting this. Their whole strategy of what they should focus on is misaligned because it's not aligned with the world that it's at. It needs to be every single person within that needs to be having the discussion. Every strategy item that you've got, every budget item you've got, whatever discussions you have, okay, what's the AI enabler for you? Because chances are it will be. Because it's not just like, oh, this could have a small incremental change, 5%. There's major shifts in how everything's done. Companies that are spending money on agencies, marketing agencies, for example, millions and millions and millions on these things, have to go back to be like, okay, well, it doesn't make sense anymore. Because often now you can actually get better work done by utilizing a cheap tool, and it'll be quicker to get that than to write a brief to an agency. Mm-hmm. Who anyway, will probably just use the tool to do it themselves. But and then you'll get 6 weeks to come back with that item of work that you would do. And believe it or not, like say one company, I had to get their marketing team of also a major financial institution to shift. They're like, no, just this technology will be so amazing. We can brief our agencies in ways we've never done before. Like, no. You've missed the point here. Like, you got to move that. You actually don't need them. Obviously, there's certain specialized things and there's mm-hmm. where values can add. But I would say 90% of what a marketing agency can do now is just being put up. The only saving grace is that the companies don't realize. Mm-hmm. So every single element of a company needs to have a huge push with understanding this. Do you think I'm wrong? I don't know. I know I'm biased, obviously, because that's what I do for a living. But the thing is that I'm really bought into the value that it can add.
Yeah, yeah. No, it's absolutely fascinating. And I think we've even begun to fathom the potential impact of this technology over the next decade. I think people always overestimate what it can do in the short term, but underestimate what it can do in the long term. And I think that's equally true in AI. And certainly, Dean, we could make this our longest podcast ever. I think our record was 3 hours.
Oh, wow.
We're not going to do that today. But I thank you very much for coming into the studio and sharing your insights. And you're most welcome to come back anytime. There's a lot to unpack and will be a lot to unpack going forward. And I think we've made a good start with this conversation. Just before I let you go, if anyone wants to learn more about Dean Furman and your business and what you do, do you have a website that you can check?
Yeah, you could either go to my personal website, deanfurman.com, or my company website, 1064degrees.com.
So what's with the 1064?
It's the melting point of gold. And every time we started a business, I thought that it's like the analogy of taking something valuable and making it more fluid to be more valuable. But anyway, no one can remember what the number is, and everyone's when they try to look at me, they're like, it's something degrees. They have to Wikipedia what's the melting point of gold. So the easiest way is going to deanfurman.com. And you can reach out to me. We'll have a good chat.
Excellent. Well, Dean Furman is an AI expert, keynote speaker, and trainer on this subject. It's been a great conversation. Thanks for sharing your insights with Tech Central.
Thanks so much. Thank you.
Thank you.